And good morning. It's really good to be with you this Saturday morning. It's bright and early. The sky is beautiful. And just think, in about 20 minutes, it'll be like 110 degrees. Well, maybe longer than that. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Even if no one calls, I've got more than enough information to make it to the program. And I always want to give information that I think you would find beneficial. I know that there's a bias here on my part. Yes, I'm continually looking for things that have zero side effects. If they happen to come from God's creation, meaning His nature, and we can use those to benefit humankind, well, that's what I want to do. And so I would prefer to talk about things that are very, very safe. They have almost no chance of having a negative side effect. For example, if I talk about aloe vera, I think most people know what the aloe vera plant is. A woman told me a story yesterday about her son that got really burned badly, and it was just horrific. But she applied aloe vera, and the very next day, they were completely shocked and amazed at how good the results are just because of the effects of aloe vera. Well, I came across this one study, and it was done, I think it's like relatively new. I don't have the date. I thought I had it here. A lot of times I like marking the date because if I come across an article from the 90s, I think, you know what, that was like 25 years ago. Is that really relevant? Well, sometimes researchers, they ask interesting questions, and they're trying to figure out what helps this condition or what helps that condition. Well, anyway, here's an article right here. And I don't mind just telling you. I'll kind of break it down and simplify it. There's so much technical jargon where they, do charts of measurements, and I try not to get into that too much because I realize that's a little bit overwhelming. But this morning, let me start us off by talking about aloe vera. And all they're doing is they're just saying in surprisingly very, very small amounts, aloe vera is magnificent at improving one's skin. Okay, there is a very particular compound or a unique compound called sterols. Guess where they're found? They're found in aloe vera. And these have a very stimulating and nourishing effect upon your skin cells. You could probably build a case this morning and say, hey, Dr. Morgan, is the skin one of the largest organs in the human body? Yes, absolutely. It's incredible what the skin does. And, of course, you know as well as I do, you have your inner skin. That's going to be your mouth and your throat and the inside of your esophagus, the inner lining of your stomach, small intestine, large intestine. Anyway, that's your inner skin. You have your outer skin. That's what we see every day. Both of them are highly protective barriers. They're supposed to serve a good function, just like on your skin. It's supposed to protect you from the outside world. You don't want the bad stuff getting in. Well, that's what your inner skin's for, the lining of your gut also. It's to protect you from stuff that might be toxic. It's a selective barrier. Okay, they did this 12-week double-blind randomized controlled trial. Let me read it to you. Japanese dermatologist at Wakayama Medical University. They divided 122 women, and these women were 30 to 54 years of age, into two groups. For 12 weeks, one half of this group, they took a placebo every day. Do you know what a placebo is? That means basically it has no active ingredient. There's no compound or molecule that might have some health-promoting effect. Let's just say it's sugar in the placebo. So there's nothing in the placebo that they could attribute to having a healing or a nourishing effect for the skin. But the other half, they took just two capsules a day of what's called aloe vera, or aloe vera extract. And which you're probably wondering, well, can you actually find aloe vera in capsule form? Well, yes. And you can find it where they've essentially dehydrated or removed the moisture, and it's just a dry capsule. So if you would go to the store and say, I'd like some aloe vera extract in a capsule, that's one thing that you can find. Of course, you probably know already that if you had horrible indigestion or acid reflux, or you were double over in pain, that might be a pretty good indication for trying to drink some aloe vera juice. I know there's going to be people that say, that's a waste of your time and don't do that, but millions of people over thousands of years can't be wrong about using aloe vera. You might want to keep that in the back of your mind just in case your tummy is upset one day. It says the extract was produced by the Japanese food company Morinaga. Although the article does not mention funding, it is clear that Morinaga had a hand in the research, because four of the employees of the Morinaga Research and Development Department were also co-authors. So that's given full disclosure right there. So what they did was, the subjects in the experimental group, they took 500 milligrams of the aloe vera extract every day. Now what I'm going to do next is I'm going to skip the research about trying to name these compounds like 2,4-methylene cyclooritanol. That's just too much. There's about 10 of them. And all they're doing is they're looking at what may end up being the active ingredients that's in the aloe vera plant that's actually good, that has a therapeutic benefit, that's healing. Okay, I get that, and I like that. But it's just too much for the radio to mention that. Okay, here's the results right here. The researchers had this device that used ultrasonic technology, and what they could use it for is determine the thickness of the women's skin. So in this way, they could very precisely determine the amount of collagen that was in the women's skin. I don't know if you know much about collagen, but it's what your skin's made of. And so when you have too little of it, guess what you're going to have? Skin's not so healthy. Of course, I really don't know if I've ever heard of a study where they find too much collagen in a woman's skin. Okay, the women's collagen score in the experimental group, it increased significantly. They could actually measure it, meaning those that took the aloe vera capsules. Okay, let me see right here. What was the other part? Oh, that's right. Okay, I wanted to read this part to you, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. Some of the women in the group, they tested in the most excellent range for having perfect skin hydration to begin with, and their skin was already perfectly thickened, or the right thickness, because they had plenty of collagen and also hyaluronic acid. And so you may recognize that, because that's in a lot of the topical moisturizers that a woman may purchase at a store. So like if you walk down the beauty aisle, usually I like to walk down the sporting goods aisle, and I haven't seen any fishing lures that have extra collagen or hyaluronic acid in them, but maybe I should start looking at the ingredients when I find a new crankbait. Anyway, so the women that already had beautiful skin, they really didn't see any changes at all when they took the aloe vera. However, when they looked at only Japanese women that had very dry skin, oh my goodness, that's the one where it was a home run. And that subgroup, meaning the women that had the really dry skin, that's where they saw these aloe vera sterols really significantly increase skin hydration. So, do you get the takeaway so far? It helped the women with dry skin. The focus should be really on women that has dry skin. Now, what I should say also, even if you've done a great job of taking care of yourself, don't you like doing things that you know are going to help maintain the integrity of your skin and keep it in good working order? The other day I saw a woman in a, I'll just say a wheelchair, and I had no idea, but somebody told me that she was in her 30s, and if you'd asked me, I would have guessed upper 60s, and that was principally because of the condition of her skin, meaning the skin wasn't in good order. Now, I'm looking at their skin hydration chart, and again, at the 12-week mark, it's obvious. It's huge. The women that took aloe vera, their skin had so much better hydration. What does hydrated skin look like? Well, it has a glow to it. It looks like it's well-conditioned. Maybe it shines a little bit. I mean, look at the lake or a stream, or look at a pond. Doesn't the water look kind of shiny as it reflects light? But what's the opposite of that? Dull. Dry. That's not healthy. Actually, when your skin's dry, this is when you're most vulnerable to infections, but when your skin is well lubricated and hydrated, this is when you can resist infection. Even things like shingles. Okay? Here's another mechanism right here. In the year 2015, that was what? 8 years ago, that's right. Researchers at the Morinaga company, they published an in vitro study. To me, this is interesting. In case you like to know how things work, that's the way I like. This was published in Clinical Cosmetology Investigation of Dermatology Journal, February of 2015. So that's 8 years ago. This is what they found. When they gave aloe vera, all of a sudden human skin cells produced 2 times more collagen than those that did not receive the aloe vera. Are you with me on that? You tell me. Would you rather have a 200% improvement in producing your own collagen? Now, you realize all they did was give aloe vera here, and there was a 200% increase in the skin cells' production of collagen. This has nothing to do with taking collagen. Nothing. So I like that one right there. And so the other one, they showed 1.5 times more hyaluronic acid. I can tell you right now, that's usually the ingredient that women are going for when they go for some type of overnight skin hydrating device, hyaluronic acid. And that is one of the hallmarks of aging. As we age, we lose collagen and we lose our hyaluronic acid in the skin. But aloe vera was able to substantially improve both of those. There's another one. This is the journal Skin Pharmacological Physiology 2016. They just showed that a little bit of aloe vera sterols, that's from the aloe vera plant, did a great job at hydrating the skin. That's a different one right there. Of course, one of the reason they did this over 12 weeks is literally, when I look at the chart here, I can't really tell by looking at all, and I'm just being very direct with you, that aloe vera showed any substantial benefit when they took it orally for the first 4 weeks. Now, at the 8-week mark, it was significant, but at 12 weeks, oh my goodness, that's where you really start to see a separation between those that took the placebo and those that took the aloe vera. So there's a principle here when it comes to healing. Whatever you do, it's good to be patient, right? And you just need time. So they didn't really see a huge result at 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or 5 weeks. Actually, at the 5-week mark, they started seeing some difference. But around 8 to 12 weeks, and the longer they took it, the better it got. So I'm kind of curious, what would happen if this wasn't for 12 weeks? What if it was for an entire year, as in 52 weeks? Now, that would be interesting to me. But I do believe that 12 weeks is long enough to see if there's a good, positive change in the skin. So what you need is you need time, you need patience, and you need consistency to heal the skin or to heal your body. Of course, the skin is what we're talking about, but the same principle would hold true if you were working on your brain. You can't expect to do one supplement that's good for the brain one day and then put the bottle back up in the cabinet and forget about it and expect it to work. You can't. I mean, you can do that, yes. You can say, Dr. Morgan, I wanted to see if my skin would become better hydrated, so I followed your advice and I took aloe vera capsules. Well, how'd it go? Well, it didn't work at all, Dr. Morgan. Well, did you take them every day? No, I just bought the bottle and put it on the shelf. I thought that would work. Of course, you know I'm being ridiculous. So, what is the other part? No, that's enough on that right there. If you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open if you have a question. This is actually the very best time to ask me a question because I have your full attention, and for all I know, your question may greatly benefit a whole lot of other people. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Now, this is a side note on my part. You may remember I may have said, of course, maybe I haven't said it in a while. When I did experiments on the space station, you know, the condominium that's floating around in the orbit of the Earth where people do experiments like astronauts, years ago, they did an experiment on plants that would filter and keep the air clean. Well, aloe vera was number two. It was awesome at cleaning the air. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, I got a quick question. I talked to you last week. Does inflammation in the body play a part with reducing the efficiency of your kidneys working?
Absolutely, it does.
Okay.
So but the question is, where is the inflammation coming from?
Okay.
Why are you asking the question? That way I can kind of pinpoint it.
Dr. Google.
Okay, well, let me give you my definition that I'm going to borrow from Dr. Russell Jaffe on the word inflammation.
Okay.
So if somebody said, define inflammation, well, I like Dr. Russell Jaffe's because I think it makes the most sense to me. Inflammation, the definition is repair deficit. So another way to say this that may make better sense, every cell in your body is going to break down at some point. But what happens is when you have cells and glands and organs like the kidneys, if they break down at a faster rate than the ability of your body to repair them, that's going to cause inflammation. And there's a lot of things that contribute to that. For example, one of the main jobs of the kidneys is to help maintain the pH of the body in the blood. And so the normal pH of your blood is supposed to be about 7.35 to 7.45. So that's slightly alkaline. That's one of the reasons why, if I look up studies on what helps prevent further damage to the kidneys and further lack of efficiency, well, one simple substance that's been around for, as far as I know, thousands of years, it's called baking soda. I think the Arm & Hammer Baking Soda Company was founded in Babylon. I'm totally making that up. That is totally a joke. But when you take a little bit of baking soda, because of its very nature, it's very soothing to the kidneys. It helps put the fire out. It helps calm them down because the more inflammation or the more acid, that makes it harder for the body to you just drain all your resources when you go through lots of high acid. That's why soft drinks full of phosphoric acid and lots of refined sugar, that's why that's so hard on the kidneys.
How much baking soda can I take? Can I take too much of it?
You can, but I would just keep it very simple. I'd probably do, I mean, if the kidneys are not that bad, you might just use a half of a teaspoon and a little bit of water. And when you first start to stir it up, it looks really milky and cloudy. But if you keep stirring and putting your muscle into it, eventually it'll turn clear. If I'm not mistaken, that's what people use when their swimming pools aren't so clear. They dump a bag of baking soda in there to clear it up. That's what baking soda is. It's sodium bicarbonate, or if you want to call it bicarbonate, that's fine too.
Okay.
So baking soda can be a godsend to help soothe and take some of the stress off the kidneys. And when you take the stress and inflammation off the kidneys, they have more available energy to repair themselves.
Yeah, I've been doing a tablespoon in the morning, and every once in a while, a teaspoon in the morning, and a teaspoon at night.
Well, no, that should be fine, and probably a teaspoon is going to work out just fine. And I do see some people that when they have more severe damage to their kidneys, it may be more like a teaspoon to start to see a difference. And if I'm not mistaken, most of the studies on this show that if somebody has, and I'm just going to make up a number here, let's say somebody has the acronym GFR is what you we talked about last week. An acronym that stands for glomerular filtration rate. It's a unit of measurement to determine how the kidneys are functioning. And right. So if that's low, like 45, that means you're in probably stage 2 renal failure. Not good. And so 60, that's where, what?
60 plus.
Right. And I'm just giving you a for instance.
Right.
So when GFR, if it was 100%, that means your kidneys are doing a great job of working at 100% efficiency. I see people all the time where their GFR is 117, 125, 130. That means the kidneys are really, really healthy and really strong, which is a good thing. And so baking soda has been really shown in a great way. It's so cheap, too. Everybody's used to spending $1,000 a day on drugs, but baking soda, what does that cost for a day? Not even a penny, probably. But anyway, so that's been shown in studies to help prevent further damage. So you can do some damage control just with baking soda alone. But yeah, inflammation is probably going to come from other parts of the body and things that do that. What you eat has everything to do with inflammation.
Well, I've changed that a lot, too. I just got to continue on and see what my next blood draw has to say.
There's a lab in Tyler called Any Lab Test Now. I want to say they're behind where the Chili's used to be on the loop there, not far from the mall. And you can walk in there anytime you want, and you can get a simple blood test that measures your kidney function without a doctor's signature. So that's an option in case you just want to find out.
Yeah, any idea what it costs?
Well, if you go to the website, anylabtest.com, or Any Lab Test Now, you can look at all their prices. I don't have their price list memorized, though. It's called Any Lab Test Now. You can go to the website. You can click on Tyler as your location. That would be Tyler, Texas, in case you're listening from somewhere else. And you can find out what they charge, and you can call them and make an appointment and get it done.
That's sad. That's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, that could come in really handy. That way you can get some instant feedback. Well, how's my plan working? Am I seeing signs of healing and rejuvenation? Because as long as there's severe amounts of inflammation, it makes it really, really hard to heal. That's why techniques like fasting or greatly reducing what are called carbohydrates, and as a general rule, I don't really read stories about people being rushed to the emergency room because they had a severe toxic reaction to organic blueberries.
You're right.
At least that hadn't been my experience.
Yeah. Is there anything else besides the baking soda that I can do to reduce the inflammation in the body?
Well, some of this is going to be setting your mind that you're going to get enough blood flowing through your kidneys. And so this is the tricky part for most people. And I know this because I listen to people make comments to what I say all day long. And, you know, I can't force a person to take care of themselves. Have you ever heard the phrase, you can lead a horse to water?
Yeah.
Anyway, if the kidneys are not in good shape, it probably takes about an hour and a half of motion and activity, like walking or getting on an exercise bicycle. Or some people, their health is not great. They might be doing good just to put their feet. They could be in a wheelchair, but they might be able to put their feet on simple pedals, and they might be able to move their legs and pedal as if they're on a bicycle. But you've got to get the blood moving. Unless you can have enough blood go through the kidneys, it's going to be really, really hard to repair them because they need the oxygen that's in the blood. And they need the nutrients that's in the blood. And so the blood is what carries the ocean of all the oxygen and nutrients. And so if somebody has kidneys that are weak and they say, well, I'm too busy because I'm involved in all these activities, or I really can't make time for that. Well, I can't really expect much difference to take place upon the kidneys. So you got to get the blood moving. That's probably going to take about an hour and a half of some type of exercise a day.
Well, so you're talking about aerobics then?
Well, if you walk, when I say walk or exercise, yes, it does make a difference when you get up and you wash dishes and you fold laundry and you go this part of the house and you sweep and you mop and you mow the grass. That all makes a difference. But usually, most studies show that when you move aerobically, if you can keep that pace up and continue pressing on and moving forward, like, let's just say that you said this morning, I'm going to walk for 2 miles. Well, I don't mean stop after 100 yards and sit down and rest. I mean just continue on. Continuous. That's what I'm referring to. Well, and that's a really a hard sales pitch for a lot of people, I promise you.
When your program morning's over with, I plan on putting my stuff together and go swimming. I swim laps down at the fitness center, and usually for between 30 and 40 minutes at a time.
Oh, that's excellent. So there's your 30 minutes right there, or your 40 minutes.
Yeah. And
excellent.
Then I get on the row machine after I've cleaned up.
Oh, yeah, that's talk about a most excellent exercise device. A rowing machine is phenomenal. So you've got 40 minutes of swimming. How much on the rowing?
I only do 10 or 15 minutes on that.
Okay, so we're up to 55 minutes right there. So could you go for a 35-minute walk?
Maybe, depending on my back. But anyway, I get a lot of aerobics in through the week, but I've always...
How so?
Speed walking, and every time I make a cup of tea, I've limited myself to one cup of coffee a day. Every time, that first cup of coffee, and then the next...
Yeah, I think that's good.
I got 2 15-pound dumbbells sitting here in my dining area, and I grab those and I do curls, and then I do standing flies, and I do that one right after another continuously for 2.5, almost 3 minutes.
That is excellent. See, you're getting there. Now, is this the pattern that you've been on for the last 10 years, or is this something new?
No, I've been doing the dumbbells for years. And as a matter of fact, one time, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was doing the standing flies, and I thought, well, I might as well see if I can coordinate this enough to do standing flies and squats at the same time. Boy, is that an exercise.
Now, were you chewing bubble gum also?
No.
Well, that's good. It sounds great. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I got my heart rate up to 16 beats in 5 seconds.
You mean increase by 16 beats?
No, I just mean... It's when I count my heartbeat in 5 seconds. My heart was beating 15 and 16 times in 5 seconds. And this friend of mine, who's a nurse practitioner, I told him that, and he says, "Bob, you can't do that."
That's right, because that's 192 beats a minute.
And I said, "Well, I did."
Well, I get that, but he's trying to be encouraging to you.
Yeah, he says, "Well, could you still walk and talk?" And I says, "I'm still talking to myself, but I says I'm staggering a little bit." He says, "Well, quit it." He says, "That's really hard on you." He says, "Your heart's beating so fast that that the heart doesn't have time to fill up with blood between the beats."
Well, he's making a very good point. I agree.
Anyway, I quit that.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, had you been doing all these things anyway, and then in addition to that, your kidneys are starting to show signs of problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
I no longer take the hydrochlorothiazide.
Okay.
And
that can be really hard on the kidneys.
Yeah. What about Losartan? He put me on Losartan.
That can be really hard on the kidneys too. And so I know this is rhetorical, but the kidneys, they have total responsibility over your blood pressure. That means if somebody's blood pressure goes up, that's a pretty good sign right there that your kidneys aren't doing their job. So we ask the question, what can we do to improve them? How do we heal the kidneys? Like I told you last week, I have not been able to do this without protomorphogens. I can't. I haven't seen it. I've had literally, I don't even know how many thousands of people that I've talked to, but I get to see what works and what doesn't.
What are protomorphogens?
Well, I talked about them last week. They're renal protomorphogens. They're nuclear compounds that come from the kidneys or the cells of the kidneys from a cow. So when you swallow those, they stimulate healing and repair, or at least that's the idea, that the kidneys might be able to regain the function. Now, of course, I am not here this morning trying to overpromise anything to anyone. I'm not that way. I don't make health claims. But what we're thinking about is, it's very, very simple. We have to nourish the kidneys. And so part of the equation is, we've got to stop the things that are beating the crap out of the kidneys, and we have to start doing the things that help nourish and feed and heal and rejuvenate the kidneys. That's what I'm referring to.
Well, is there any natural type, anything natural that acts as a diuretic that
of course horsetail? Yes, there's actual research showing that if you take horsetail, that's actually more effective than taking a thiazide diuretic, according to this one study. I actually have it right here. It's kind of funny you should bring that up.
And how much of that should I take?
Well, okay, here's what they used right here. They use 900 milligrams of what's called Equestium arvens. That's just the Latin name for horsetail. And in the study, they took three 300 milligram capsules, so that was 900 milligram total of horsetail, and that's where they saw the difference. I'm trying to look at the time frame here. Usually I'm pretty good about like highlighting how long the study lasted. Man, I can't find it. Okay, the research was done on day 4 of taking horsetail. I found it. So it took 4 days for it to work. So what they did was they compared against hydrochlorothiazide diuretic, and that dose was 25 milligrams. So this was a study where they took 36 healthy people, and it didn't say anything about high blood pressure. I'm trying to read the study here. But they showed that horsetail, which, if I'm not mistaken, most people could go to like a plant farm or a nursery, and they could buy that and plant it in front of their front door. But they just used capsules of horsetail, and it showed to be more effective than even taking the thiazide diuretic.
Yeah.
HTZ.
Well, I don't. The reason I ask that is I don't think that there's any way that I'm going to get along without a diuretic.
Well, yes, there is. Heal your kidneys, and you won't need a diuretic.
Well, we'll see what all of this changes.
Well, no, what I'm saying is technically it's very true and correct. If your kidneys heal, that means they regain their ability to work properly. And so right now, I don't know how long you've taken the diuretic or the blood pressure medication. How long have you taken it for?
Close to 20 years.
Well, that means you've got 20 years of unresolved damage that we need to work on correcting.
Well, the damage came from my taking statins.
Yeah.
Like 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and that they started me holding water in my lower limbs when I first noticed it.
Did your doctor warn you that taking cholesterol-lowering drugs might cause severe damage to your kidneys?
No. I didn't take, I might have took it, statins for like about a year and a half. And I noticed my feet and lower leg swelling one day, and I thought, this ain't right, because I was building barbed wire fence around a pond, and I was probably walking at least 5, maybe 10 miles a day.
Well, I hope all these things help you greatly, and I'm rooting for you, and I wish you the very best.
All right. I thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, the phone line is once again open. That's 903-586-5257, 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, good morning, sir. My father lived to about 90, but he had low systolic pressure. And they put him on a pacemaker. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you have what's called your vagus nerve. You may have to turn your radio off.
It's off.
Okay, thank you. The vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve, and that is the nerve supply that regulates the heart. So if somebody loses what's called their vagal tone, or the vagus nerve becomes weakened, that's where you're going to need a pacemaker. Did he have a lot of stress in his life? Was he a worrier?
No, not at all.
Okay.
He, after he retired, he ran his farm and stayed busy, played golf a lot, an excellent golf player.
Well, you have two options, and either the heart becomes very, very weak. And so just like the gentleman that called, he said he thinks that his kidney damage was because of statin drugs. There's so many drugs that are so hard on the heart. Is there any chance that your father took calcium channel blockers or cholesterol-lowering drugs?
No, he took a baby aspirin for years.
Okay. Is that the only thing that he took?
No, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I know that genetically, you can find this in families. Sometimes a family has heart problems. Did his family have heart problems?
Not that I know of.
Well, give me your best guess. Why would he need a pacemaker then?
I don't know.
Well, it's because the heart is weak or the vagus nerve is weak.
Okay,
I just don't know the reason why.
Okay, I understand.
So, I mean, but you tell me what you want me to say, though. I'm not really following you.
Okay, well, I
are you saying you want to know about this because you want to protect yourself or what?
That's right. I would think that'd be a fair question.
Okay, what is your resting heart rate right now?
Well, it's below 120. It's below 120 over 80.
Well, that's your blood pressure. I meant your heart rate.
Oh, well.
Now, that's a good blood pressure,
the
then.
You mean the pulse rate?
Yeah, pulse rate, yeah.
Well, it is high. My pulse rate is high, and I have a doctor's appointment to come up. I want to work on some things on that.
Okay, so the vast...
135.
And that's what I should have said. You're right. So, pulse rate. Thank you for saying that.
Okay.
So, this is the number of times that your heart beats per minute. That makes sense, right?
Yes.
So if you put one of those pulse oximeters on your finger, they cost like
$18. I have one. I use it, yes.
And they are very accurate. They have that little laser diode. But anyway, if the vast majority of all issues with the heart, it's going to be when the heart rate is above 80 to 81 beats a minute. And so if you tell me your resting heart rate is 63 beats a minute, I'd say that's great. If you tell me your resting heart rate is 58 or 68 or 70, I'd say that's fabulous. But you start seeing all the trouble with the heart when the pulse rate is above 80 beats a minute. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if your resting pulse rate or heart rate is above 80 beats a minute, there's several things that I would personally look at. Number one. The human body has got to require minerals. Minerals kind of run the show. So you've heard of electrolytes. That can be everything from sodium to chloride to potassium. There are long-term studies that demonstrate if a person is low in potassium, they can start to have issues with the heart. The heart works harder. Obviously, if I had your blood work right in front of me, what I would do is I would look at several markers. One of them is called homocysteine. homocysteine has been shown to be 40 times more predictive of a heart problem than a cholesterol test is. 40 times.
It's astounding.
I know. It is astounding. I like the word you use. That's going to be my new word for the rest of the program. That's astounding. And so when your homocysteine starts going above 7.7, that's probably like a perfect range right there. If it was 8, I promise you, I wouldn't even flinch. But when your homocysteine starts getting around 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that means your body's not methylating very well, and you're getting all this dirty debris in your blood. And a lot of these things I'm talking about, you can't just see them easily. And I ask people questions all day long. What did your doctor say about this? Why did your doctor say that your heart rate is elevated? So as we age, that's one thing. So you could always have your homocysteine measured. And if it's too high, then maybe you need to take methylated B vitamins, and one of them would be called methylcobalamin. That's an example of a methylated form of vitamin B12.
I think you mentioned that before, too.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was going to mention, just very, very simply, the American Red Cross, if you go to their website and you click on the heading that has to do with blood donation, the study that comes from Finland, they followed all these men. A lot of them were cigarette smokers, and they had, you know, cigarette smoking is not good for the heart. Would you agree with me?
No, absolutely.
I seriously doubt that you're vaping nicotine all day long. Am I right about that?
That's true.
Okay, thanks. Good. There's hope for the human race after all. But what I was going to say is they showed that you have an 88% reduction and the risk of having a heart attack if you just give blood once every 2 years. So for men, the hidden danger is if you get a buildup of old toxic iron, then that's really going to wreck your heart. It doesn't work right when you build up iron because it starts rusting. You know how women have a normal menstrual cycle every 28 days?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, men do not. Now, I've heard stories that transgender men do, and they can also become pregnant. I just don't know that I believe that.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Can I tell you the worst joke I heard this week? This is probably going to get me in trouble, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
Okay, why did the transgender man eat salad? And the answer is because he was an herbivore. Sorry.
That's good.
That's pretty bad.
Isn't it? That is good.
All right, enough of that. So one thing that I would look at if I had a list of the things that I would order on a blood test, I would look at your homocysteine levels.
Okay.
The next one that I like to look at is called ferritin. F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, I think. Yeah. Ferritin.
Okay.
But ferritin, when that starts to get above 50 in a man, in all men, what happens is you start rusting and oxidizing in the blood. So the other thing that I would look at, there's a simple test that just about every doctor or nurse orders each visit. It's called a CBC with a differential. And in that, they can measure your hematocrit. That's HCT. Now, personally, I think you start seeing problems in the heart when that starts going above the number 44. So then what that means is your blood's thickening. And so when your blood is thickening, you might have an issue with the heart having to work harder. Now, if you're low in oxygen, your heart's going to speed up also. Are you low in oxygen?
No, I walk 2 miles a day and I'm pretty active.
You sound like your mind is really sharp. I'm really good at guessing ages. I'm going to guess you're 42 to 44. Am I right?
Well, you're pretty close.
See, that's all it counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
CBC or CD as in dad?
C as in boy.
Okay.
It stands for cell blood count or complete blood count.
Okay.
And so you've got all these things that are clues that maybe nobody else would bring up, but they tell a story about what's going on inside of your body. And you know how the Bible talks about how the life is in the blood?
Yes.
I am not telling you that I completely understand the totality of it. I just don't. But that's always the thing that God required as an acceptable sacrifice. It always made me wonder about Abel offered a more acceptable sacrifice. Cain did not. I wonder why. But we know that Abel probably gave a perfect, unblemished lamb, didn't he?
I think so.
Okay. Well, the quality of a person's blood is huge when it comes to a resting pulse rate. And so what I want is, I want to take a look at the blood. So homocysteine, ferritin. Do you know anything about your cholesterol levels? Because there's one marker called, when you look at a lipid profile, it goes by the abbreviation VLDL. And that stands for very low density lipoprotein. And so historically, when that number gets to 21 and above, that's a pretty good clue that plaque and debris is forming in the arteries at a faster rate. And so there's another test that medical doctors love to do, and I like it. It's called the calcium scoring test. If that comes back zero, that means the heart's perfect. There's no plaque buildup. But the higher that number goes, that suggests that there's more calcification and more plaque. But with the pulse rate, the first thing that I would try, or there's two or three things, is I would usually give some type of an adrenal adaptogen. An adaptogen is basically kind of a fancy term for anything that helps your adrenal glands adapt to stress better. Even though you don't have any emotional stress, I may be talking about the physical stress that's on your heart or your blood right now. Okay. So adaptogens, that can be everything from ashwagandha, it could be holy basil. I can assure you, holy basil is not holy. It is not. It's just a plant. I'd had nothing to do with the name of it. So those are simple ones right there. Sometimes Eleuthero. I love rhodiola. I like ginseng. All those are very good adaptogens. Then the next thing that I would look at is I look at minerals. Minerals play a huge role in your heart and your pulse rate, but usually the one I'm thinking of, I'm going to go with magnesium number one and probably potassium number two. But usually those are really easy to get if you would just eat one green salad a day.
Okay, I've listened to you for a year or so. When I found you, it was wonderful. And I've been trying to do all these things you mentioned. I've always exercised and had a pretty good diet, but so.
Well, we just have to find the glitch. And so, so when you wake up in the morning and you check your pulse rate, what is your pulse rate in the morning when you wake up?
Well, I usually check it later in the day. If I get up in the morning, I publish quite a bit and do research, so I usually get on that and work for a while
What kind of research do you do?
Well, I've done extensive research. My first patent was a chemical process that was 10 times better in steel production than had been found in the world.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I knew I was talking to a genius when you called.
Well, no, I just have gone to college, and I've been a school teacher much of my life, and people say, well, why are you a school teacher? You could make a lot more money doing other things. Well, my parents were both teachers, and I love kids. And
well, you're making the world a better place. God bless you, man.
Well,
way to go. See, people like you make the world a better place. I'm so glad to know you.
Well, when my kids go on and when they make an A in chemistry at Texas, I'm pleased. That's one of my great rewards.
Oh, man, that's beautiful. I love it. What did you teach? Did you teach chemistry?
I've taught chemistry, physics, calculus, statistics, and you know, all the favorite classes, and half of my doctorate was in applied statistics. So,
oh my goodness,
kind of get in a rare world there, where when you give these statistical studies, that really gets my attention because I go to that. You know,
you know what? You and I are going to get along really well together.
Well, I love your program.
Thank you. Well, I love it when you call.
Week.
Well, let me ask you this right here. When you lay down in bed at night to go to sleep, do you find your heart racing or pounding a bit, or do you notice it?
No, I've never seen that.
So your heart is very quiet when you lay down and when you raise up from your sleep, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's an excellent sign. How long does it take you to fall asleep when you lay down and you put your head on the pillow?
Oh, maybe 5 minutes.
That's not very long.
Okay.
You must have a very clear, clean conscience.
Well, when you work all day and you stay busy...
Are you trying to say that idle hands are the devil's workshop? Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
You know what? It's really true. Wouldn't that would be a living hell to have to just sit in a room with nothing to do, wouldn't it?
Oh, that'd be terrible.
So work is a gift. It's a blessing from God, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, really do you stay asleep all night long?
Sometimes I wake up in the night. I listen to you, and I try not to drink much before I go to bed. But I've kind of observed that if I get a glass of water and I put your salt in there, about 3 hours I'll go to the bathroom. So now, sometimes I will wake up about 3 a.m., which I'm trying to stop that.
But do you stay awake for a while before you go back to sleep?
If I start thinking about an article I'm writing, I'll stay awake, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to stop that.
But that's just a matter of you're on autopilot and you're just processing, thinking, this is the work I've got to get done. How am I going to approach it?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I would still say, even given what you're telling me, I would still look at the following things. I'd probably look at hawthorn. I would definitely look at cod liver oil. I'm a huge fan of what's called grapeseed extract, or sometimes it's called maritime bark extract from a pine tree. Okay. You see how I butchered those words? You would do a much better job of it than I would. And so I would really work the mineral angle. I might even for a short season just try to find out what my limits on magnesium were. And what I mean by that is this. I'm not trying to make you have an accident. So I didn't say take a whole bottle of magnesium right before you go to church and sit on the front row.
Okay.
How fast can you run, by the way?
Well, I usually walk. I used to run 5 miles a day. I cut it back, but I'll walk 2 miles for what you've said before.
Well, good. Well, anyway, you're trying to find out what is the limit of magnesium, and so you might experiment by taking the manufacturer's dose.
Right.
As long as you don't have any loose bowels and everything's fine, you're not overly gassy, you're not at risk of having a accident, so to speak, you might even try increasing it at a capsule or two more. But what you may find is you may find that your unique genetic metabolic requirement or need, or biochemical individuality, I think is what Dr. Bland calls it, It may be more than that. And those things are definitely true. You can't compare two people. It's apples and oranges. Just like I can't compare all the other chemistry teachers to you.
Well, you have to love kids and love teaching.
Although, the other day, I thought about my high school chemistry teacher. His name was Mr. House. And he was hard. But you know what? That's good, isn't it?
That's great.
And I ran into one of his relatives the other day, and I haven't thought about him in probably, 50 years. But still, I have very fond memories from my chemistry teachers. And actually, when I went to Higgjick for junior college, Don Peek, he was my chemistry teacher. You know my teachers that I remember? It's always chemistry or biology. I always remember those. If you asked me about my physics teacher, maybe not so much. Very nice guy, but I don't really remember. No, I did have a real kind English teacher. I probably should have paid much better attention to her. So anyway, these are things that you can work on, but we've got to be able to figure this out so your body can maintain itself and stay in good working order. That's also called healing and repair.
Yes, can I ask you another question quickly?
Of course.
Okay, you started with the first thing you said. The mineral angle, I wrote down H, then I got cod liver oil, grapeseed.
Well, I was saying magnesium. H for hawthorn.
Hawthorn, okay, I have that. I take that.
Hawthorn is literally one of the most excellent herbs of all time. Excellent.
Okay.
I've seen that fix things that nothing else would. There was actually a study that was, I can't remember what year it was, but they looked at people that had severe blood clots that nothing else could resolve and take care of. And so far, I haven't seen a blood clot that hawthorn won't dissolve. It's amazing. Now, if you ask me, please, Dr. Morgan, explain in precise chemical terms how that happens. I can say, I knoweth notteth how it worketh. But you know what? There's a lot of things in chemistry you can't explain, but you know for a fact it works, right?
That's very true.
Do you ever struggle with things like that? trying to figure out the mechanism of how it works, its mode of action.
That's right. I've always, even on your program, I've tried to think about mechanisms and what's going on in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, you like to know, you like to know what it's actually doing in the body, the effect.
Well, that's what's really served me well, and I want to be just like you. I want to be a highly curious person. I want to ask the question, how come this is not working right? Why does this person have all these horrible symptoms? And what can we do to change the conditions to help the body to heal and repair itself?
I wish that all medicine was like that.
It's not.
I know.
It's like, hello, Mr. Jones, we're going to change your blood pressure medication. We're going to add blood pressure medication number 6 and 7. And you're going, well, what's causing it? Well, we don't have time to talk about that.
And you'll be on it the rest of your life, too.
You've heard that phrase before?
Oh, I've listened. I've heard you. And it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Find out the problem and try to deal with it.
Well, unfortunately, all my pharmacy professors in school wouldn't let me do that. They said, Roy, your job is to find out what the problem is so you get them back into good working order where they don't need the medication. So that used to be the common philosophy among all pharmacists and doctors. We're only going to use the medication short term until we can get the body working right again.
Yeah.
But that's kind of fallen by the wayside, I think.
85% of our medicines come from plants. Hey, that sounds like Genesis 1, doesn't it?
It does to me.
Yeah.
The leaves of the trees are for the healings of the nation.
It's interesting. The Bible, Genesis 1, opens with the trees, and the last chapter of Revelation 22 ends with the trees.
Isn't that something? I like this.
That's amazing.
Do you know what I read the other day? I was in Genesis chapter 1, in verse 2, it talked about the Holy Spirit hovering above the waters.
Yes.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, that word means brood. And when I started thinking about that, I said, oh, you mean like a mother hen over her brood of chicks. It's very interesting.
That really is.
Very concerned. But I kind of look at that, and I could be wrong about this, so please forgive me if I am. But the Holy Spirit has this tremendous concern about the well-being of His creation. I like that. I like knowing that there's a God that cares deeply about us and that loves us and actually wants what's best for us. The problem is we are disobedient sometimes and we get in the way of that.
Well, we've drifted so far from that. It's really frightening now.
Would you agree that the only chance that you and I have is if God extends grace and mercy to us?
That's absolutely true.
I think that's probably biblical, don't you?
Very.
I appreciate what you're telling me about the book of Genesis. The Bible begins with talking about trees and it ends with trees.
That's right.
Where do you think the tree of life is right now?
Well, that is kind of a difficult question.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just having kind of fun with you.
Well, I know.
Well, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's not in the Garden of Eden on the Earth.
Oh.
Maybe it's been removed by an expert team of arborists to a different location.
That's probably right. That's probably right.
There was a video the other day on YouTube where a man was saying he saw the Ark of the Covenant that was in a cave or an opening underground underneath the cross of Jesus. And I thought, is that really true? Is that really true? I don't know. It's very curious, though. But you know what? You and I, we don't have to know. All we need to know is what God's chosen to reveal to us, the hidden things or the secret things. We're not required to know those things, are we?
Well, the wisdom of the world is foolishness to God.
Amen, brother. Well, I really appreciate your phone call, and unfortunately, I think we're completely out of time this morning.
And I appreciate all you do.
You're welcome. Hang in there. Let me know what happens. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're listening to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Roy Morgan. Welcome back this time next week, 7 o'clock. Lord willing, we'll have another edition of Health Essentials.